called, Eddie, right, in the year 2001. Right, the end games, right. Still have several end games coming up, okay? But hopefully we'll get into the easier end games again, okay? So, we are reviewing and continuing in Maseches Megillah, Daf Ches, in other words, page 8, and Samad Aleph, the first side of the page, and this is what we're doing. And here we have a series of Mishnayos that begin with Ein Bein, but there is a particularly very difficult Gemara that will follow very soon. Okay? About the second half of the page. The first Mishnah on the top of the page deals, as I told you, with people who take a vow. We're dealing with a neder, and the neder over here is not the kind of a neder which consists of an animal sacrifice, but rather a neder where a person says, either I abstain from something, I'm not going to touch, for example, I'm going to stop smoking, I won't touch a cigarette, okay? Or I'm not going to eat any ice cream or something like that. That's one type. But another type would be, frankly, that I say to the other guy, says, I don't want to have anything to do with any of doing any business with you. Or I don't want you to have any business with me. So, in that case, as I said, we have one person that's called the Madir. He's the one who imposes the vow upon the other person. And on the other hand, the Mudar is the one upon whom this prohibition has been imposed. Question was asked, I remember last week, can a person impose a prohibition against somebody else? And the answer is yes, if the guy is a mean guy. And unfortunately, all this business, you know, where I say I don't want anything to do with you, or I don't want you to have anything to any benefit for me, and so on, all this is because of the nastiness in relations between human beings. Naturally, we have a remedy for it. The remedy is what we call asking the shaila. You go before the Rav, explain the situation, the Rav will ask questions, did you understand the significance, what was going on, and so forth. And then in that particular case, if he feels that there is sufficient grounds, what can he do? He can annul it, right? Okay. The question was raised also last week about, for example, Kol Nidre, if you remember, right? And we said that Kol Nidre may absolve promises that we made to the Beit HaShalil that we would do, but it does not absolve us from promises which we made to other people and which we failed to keep. That's already a different story. In order to be absolved from that, you have to go to that person and apologize and say, I'm sorry that I wasn't able to do something like that. And hopefully he will be, as we say in Hebrew, he should be Meichel. Really, it's Mother Lesson too. What you know, Meichel means that he will forgive. Right. Okay? So the Mishnah now talks about, first of all, Ein Bein HaMudah HaNoah MeChavir LeMudah MeMena MaAchol. All right, we say that there's no difference between a person who, in general, is prohibited from enjoying anything from the other person, to a person who is prohibited from him only as far as food is concerned. The word man said, he didn't say to him, I don't want you to have anything to do with me. What he said simply is that, I'm sorry, if it comes to food, I'm not going to sell you any food. Or I'm not going to let you borrow any food, or something like that. Okay, that's what we call machal. Right?
Can you do that about food? Isn't food a necessity? I mean, isn't there a...
Food is a necessity, there's no question about it.
Like you're supposed to return a cloak before nighttime because the person would be cold without it. Food, they would die without food.
Yeah, look, it all depends on what the circumstances are, okay? As I said, we're talking about a nasty person, okay? Nasty person. Or a person who is the victim of what? Of somebody else's nastiness. Which is what the Buddha in this case would be, okay? The guy says, if you... I'm not going to lend you any pots or pans or something like that. I'm tired, you went, you borrowed, you didn't give it back to me on time, something like that. From now on, I make a vow, right? That the vow is that I'm not going to lend you any kalim. All right. Now, let's say that the person, did not make such a vow. All he said is that I make a vow that if you want to have any, any strawberries for me. I have a garden which we already saw this, but I make a vow that you cannot have any strawberries for me, something like that, okay? That in that particular case, what is the difference? So it says the difference, the Mishnah says the only difference between these two cases is Drisas HaRegel and Kalim She'nis Behem Eichel Nefesh. Drisas HaRegel means that that person is, normally a person is permitted to go over another person's property in those days because they didn't have sidewalks. You understand? We have a sidewalk, so that therefore we can afford to be a little bit more fussy about it than the average person now, a person who owns a household, right? He owns a house, he has a sidewalk and so on. He wants any person to walk on the sidewalk and not to go running across his grass. I mean, you find kids, for example, that they'll take a bicycle and they'll run over your lawn and something like that. You know, people can be nasty. Even young people can be nasty if they don't have the proper training, okay? So, at any rate, in those days, Drisas HaRegel was permitted in a general fashion. In other words, people could walk on another property unless they were specifically prohibited from it. And the other one is vessels in which you prepare food, pots, pans, dishes, or something like that, silverware, you name it, where if you say that I prohibit you from having ochel, in other words, any kind of food, in that case, that also extends to what? The food preparation as well. This is what they're saying. But it says, but
these instructions
that
you can't put a prohibition on, I mean,
it's
a prohibition.
On the contrary, you can. You can. You can put a prohibition. Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so this is what it says in the Gemara, going over in Drisas HaRegel, it says, holy kafte, in shape, people in general are not fussy if somebody walks over their property, but nevertheless, in this case, if a person is, he puts a ban upon it, then in that case it should be respected. And so therefore, my Rava, Homani, so Rava wants to know who is the person, the author of this particular edict, so he says, Rabbi Eliezer, it's Rabbi Eliezer. The Omar, he said, Ditur Osir ben Muda Hador. He says that there can be no compromise in the case of a person who you say he cannot have any benefit from you. Now, I don't have to tell you that the sages did not agree with Rabbi Eliezer, because unless it's specifically spelled out, in that case, it's possible. All right, so. Then the next one, I remember we also did in Bein Adorim LeDovos. What is the difference between Adorim and LeDovos? And as I said, here we were not talking about what we talk about in the shul when we say you shnor something, in other words, you make a promise that you'll give a donation to the shul, right? Or in a dova, something, a poor man comes and sticks out his hand to you and you give it a dova. Or the rabbi makes an appeal for a particular fund, or you got 25 mail letters in the mail, each one of them asking to give guilt and so on, right? And if you made a pledge on the phone that they give it, then of course you're expected to fulfill that, okay? So in that, we're not talking about that type of business, we're talking about animals, as we said, korbanos, that you decided that you wanted to bring a korban and offer it up. The difference is only that in the case of the Dorim, right? So, in that particular case, if you say, as we'll see in the Gemara, Hare Olai Korban, in other words, you say, I'm going to give a sacrifice, and in that particular case, we'll see that if something should happen to an animal which you had expected to offer as a sacrifice, and that animal is lost or stolen or pagers, right? Passes away, right? Not allowed to shechet it, but let's say that the animal, something happened to it, natural death, then in that particular case, what happens? Then you have to select another animal in order to replace it.
Should the animal be designated up front before you make another, or the person can say, okay, I'm going to give a
sacrifice, but I have yet designated the animal. I lose this before.
Well, if you have not designated the animal, then in that particular case, it would be more or less in the idea of hare or lai. In other words, even though you haven't yet given it, but nevertheless, you have made a pledge and you're going to give a sacrifice, right? Herb? Didn't realize. Started using it big tomorrow. All right.
I just come from the cemetery. So
I know what it's like.
Yesterday.
I ran around yesterday also to the cemeteries with Ann, right? And I was good and poop by the time I got back.
Yeah,
right.
Tired
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I was 500 miles.
Right.
Mm.
So, yeah. So, with the Dovas, you say simply that if this animal is going to be a sacrifice, then in that case, what happens if the animal dies, or somebody steals it, or the animal gets lost somewhere? Then in that particular case, you're not obligated then to replace it, okay?
If it was the only animal you had,
yeah.
You give a money value?
You could always give a donation, okay? You can give a donation. Usually, if you give a donation, then that donation is, what we say, for the Berek HaBayis, which means literally that you're doing it in order to for the good of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, but a specific korban in that particular case, that's an animal itself that you say you're going to sacrifice, or you intend to designate an animal, for it or something like that. Okay. So this is what the Gemara says. Here is where the Gemara says they are alike. They are alike in one thing, and that is that if you make a pledge, then don't delay in fulfilling the pledge. We had learned actually in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah when we went into this in great detail, right? You have to do. There are different ideas as to how soon you have to do it. Some say immediately.
Right.
Some say by the first yontif that comes. Others say by the second yontif. And of course, the prevailing opinion, if you remember, was
three.
By Shalosh Regalim, right? It has to be three, but the three might stretch out to five.
Yeah, right.
Because we said, exactly when did you make it? And on that basis, because we said also the three have to run in the order of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. So that if you made it, let's say, not before Pesach, but let's say that you made it before Shavuos, then in that case you have what?
Five.
You have five, right?
Wait,
that's right, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. But in any rate, the basic principle of Lo Sa'achel Shamon, what we got in the Torah this past Shabbos, Parsha Kiseitzeh, that if you're making neder, do not delay in fulfilling it. Okay? So, all the Inyan, Balte Acher, Zerizar Shok. Okay. They're alike. In other words, whether it's a neder or a nedava, but you have to come across with it. All right. Tanan Hosam, and we've also learned, so the Gemara says, a Zehud neder. What do we mean by a neder? It's Ho'im Ahare Olai Ola, right? The person says, I am going to bring a burnt offering, all right? Take upon myself the obligation of bringing a burnt offering. Eze nedova, what do we mean by a nedova? So it says, Ho'ba harei zu oila. In the case of nedova, he says, this animal is going to be set aside as a nedova. So, what is the basic difference between them? Nedorim, in the case of Nedorim, he said, Mesu or Nigdavu of, if the animal died or was stolen or got lost, and Chavach Yesod, if you simply say, I'm going to give a sacrifice, right, I'm going to give an Ola, in that case, if this animal died, you have to replace it with another animal. But Nedovos, if you said, I'm offering this animal, then in that case, Mesu or Nigdavu of, if they died, if they were stolen, or if they got lost, in that case, you are not responsible to replace it. So, so how do we know that there is a reference in Scripture for this idea? As our rabbis taught,
which means that it shall be pleasing unto him to atone for it. So how is it interpreted? So Rabbi Shimon Omer says, Et she'olov, where it is the chaper olov, stresses upon the word olov, which means literally upon him. So in other words, it doesn't put the stress upon the chaper olov to atone for him, to atone for himself, but he puts the stress upon the word olov, which means if I say I have the responsibility of offering up a sacrifice, then in that case, chai b'achu yosef. The yeshenu olov, but if you do not say that I have this obligation to offer up a sacrifice, then eino chai b'achu yosef. In that case, he's not responsible for it. My mashma, what does this teach us? So Rabbi Yitzchak Rav Dimi. So Rabbi Yitzchak Rav Dimi said, kevin liyomah olai, the minute that he says, it is upon me, in other words, it is my obligation, so it's commanded to in akasvei domi. It's as if actually he was carrying the animal upon his shoulder. In other words, he has now committed himself, and the lie means it is upon me. Of course, you know, it is the nature of the Hebrew language, but one of the ways that we say in Hebrew that I have to do something is a lie. And therefore, of course, what is the meaning of aleinu l'shabeach? After all, we say it three times a day. What does aleinu l'shabeach mean? It means that we have the obligation of giving praise. This is what it means. Okay?
So if the animal develops womb, it still belongs to them.
Ah, okay. Then that, of course, is already a technical question, because we learned that an animal which has a womb, right, that you shall not sacrifice to the Lord. Okay? So, in that particular case, what is the right thing? The right thing is to substitute a different animal for it. Okay? But the animal has no blemish whatever, and you decide that I want to send use another animal in its place, then that already is what we call a case of tabura. Take my word. You have all kinds of technicalities. Tabura means that you want to substitute
tabura.
Tamura. There's a whole Gemara, Tamuras, right?
You
okay.
See how
right.
I see it, like you can't
right.
Lose it.
The verb in Hebrew is a heimir, okay, which means that, you want to exchange in this case, is what it means, okay? So, the Tamura, the punishment is that you have to give both the animal that you had originally expected and also the one that you want to substitute. They both have to be offered as sacrifices. Because it's written, Lo Yach Difenu, Lo Yomir Oisei Toi Barel Robert. I mean, that's what it says, okay. Not exchange it, okay. But you know, people do exchange. They feel that they're doing a mitzvah. So in that case, then both. Right.
Well,
yes.
They also use the sense of consideration when we book contract.
Yeah. Right, of course. I mean, after all, you're a lawyer. In the study, you passed the bar in Israel, so you know that. Right.
Now, this all becomes. Right. I think I asked this question last week. It's like the honor system, though, because how does anyone know, how do they know which animal you designated? You really are the one who...
You are the one who's responsible,
one who
right.
And
exactly.
You are
a
rebuttal.
Right, exactly.
So if you are making the an exchange,
yeah.
How is anyone else to know that you've made that exchange and then charge you the two animals?
The answer is that you have to be honest enough to confess to them.
Honest system.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you're going to make that exchange in the first place, you're not going to be honest enough to confess. It's just
not necessarily so. If a person takes his religion seriously, then if he makes a commitment, he should try to fulfill the commitment. I mean, we know that we're all human and that we have weaknesses and things like that. But still, we also yearn to do the right thing. At least we should yearn to do the right thing, right? So in this case, if we have made a moral commitment, we should try to fill it.
He would probably mark it somehow. But if he's got 100 sheep, I mean, he's got to mark something in some fashion.
Well, that's already a different story, marking. Where we mention the business of marking is actually in reference to what we call Maaser Behema. Maaser Behema, you know, what is Maaser? Maaser means that you give one-tenth of what it may be, right? So you have three different maaseros. First of all, there's maaser rishon, there's maaser sheni, and there's maaser Shlishi, okay? But in addition, you also have Basar Behema. We learned about this when we studied the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, where we learned that, for example, the question as to when is one of the four Rosh Hashanahs mentioned is the first of Elul, right? Where the Mishnah says that the first of Elul is the new year's for Basar Behema, right? But there is another opinion then that they cite, which says that actually the first day of Tishrei is also the new year, you know, for Basar Behema. But what is Basar Behema? Young animals, young sheep, goats, right? Calves are born during a particular year. Then in that particular case, if you have 10 of them, you put them in a pen, have them run through, and number 10 gets marked with red ink, red paint, okay? And then time will come when you take it to Yerushalayim, and what do you do with it? You eat it. You have a festive meal with it, okay? That's Basar Behema. Naturally, if you have 20, then in that particular case, you're going to have two animals already, right? And if you have a big herd, and let's say you have only 25, in that case, how many? You're only going to bring two in that case, because you have to run through the pen, and every number 10 is marked, okay?
You didn't give them to the Kohanim.
Not that. That was meant to be by the Ba'alim, by the people themselves,
oh, okay.
Right? It would be taken to Yerushalayim and to be eaten over there, okay? Yeah.
What's the Bechor?
Bechor is a different story. A Bechor is a firstborn born to an animal. Okay? Now we're talking about a kosher animal. Okay?
And that one goes to the...
That is given to the Kohen as a sacrifice to eat. Right. Whatever you want to call it. I mean, but that's already, that's of course. Of course, remember, if you happen to recite Ezeu Mekomen, so the very last Mishnah is HaBachor, HaBaser, right? The HaPesach, Kochim Kalim, and so on, and where they can be slaughtered, but there's a different Shinabach Mishnah, there's a different way when it comes to how the animals to be eaten, right? What is the different ways? So, HaBachor, Nechal HaKohanim, says so, okay? In other words, the Kohanim only eat the Bachor. HaMaser, Nechal Odom, and the Maser, in other words, the Maser Behema, can be eaten by anyone, which means that essentially that the owners eat it, and if they want to ask other people to come and join them, Gesuntahe, because it's their decision, right? But it's essentially, it's Be'olim, the owners of the animal, okay? And then, of course, with the Korban Pesach, I don't have to tell you, there they have several restrictions, right? First of all, it has to be eaten in an Echol Liminuyot. In other words, a group of people have to get together and decide that they're all going to share in the same Korban Pesach. Okay? And they also have to finish eating the Korban Pesach by what time? By Chatzos. By midnight. Okay? Right. So this is what the last Mishnah in Ezeu Mekomen deals with. So, if you have a sinner, before you rush into Rabbi Yishmael, take a look sometimes.
Yeah, that's the last one.
Right, right, yeah. Yes.
That has to be in the Beit HaMikdash?
Yes.
If you have all these,
doesn't have to be eaten, by the way, in the Beit HaMikdash. It has to be eaten in Yerushalayim,
however.
Ah, okay. B'chol ha'ir, okay? You understand? So in other words, as long as you're within Yerushalayim, you eat it. You should not take it, however, outside of Yerushalayim.
If you had a number, if you have a number of sheep, let's say you have 300 yearlings.
Sure.
So there are 30 of them that have to be taken to through someone.
That's correct. Boy, you could have a big feast with that.
They would give to the poor, would they not? Yeah. I mean, it would be distributed.
Some things could be given to the poor, but you bring it, you have a big feast. Right.
Now, the question...
maybe you can marry off your daughter at the same time.
I mean, thinking about all these people on the hills around
here,
all with their... you know, flock. With their flock that they're going to kill off.
Right.
That needed to
be... All right. If you can't take it all, let's say doing the Yishtalos Regalim, so you make another pilgrimage to Yerushalayim in order to do it, okay?
What a barbecue.
But a lot of people, I tell you, know, you, they would bring it, let's say, at the time in the Yishtalos Regalim, when they would have an opportunity, you know, to fulfill all the pledges that they had made during the year. And so, after all, Pesach is not just one day. Pesach is 7 days in Yerushalayim, right? Sukkot is 8 days in Yerushalayim. So you can have a feast every day. You make a party. You don't have to eat all 30 sheep at one time, okay? You can have 5 sheep this day, 5 sheep the next day, and so on and so forth, okay?
I'm thinking about the human dimensions,
though.
On the hill surrounding Jerusalem, this big covered wall to wall.
Right, right.
With people and
but you know, right. You know, we speak in the 5th chapter of Pirkei Avos about there are 10 miracles that happened to our ancestors in the Beis HaMikdash, right? And it mentions different things over there. But one of the things is that the very fact that Omdim Tzfufim, they would stand crowded one next to another, and yet the Mishtachvim and Rochim, when it came time for them to fall on the ground, to prostrate themselves, there was a space for everybody. So it was a miracle that took place, okay?
Wasn't there something, though, isn't there something where if it's a hardship for them to carry the animals that they could take the money value and spend it in Jerusalem?
That's something different. That has nothing to do with the animal itself.
Well,
that has to do with things that grow.
Perishable.
Right, perishable things. Fruits, bikurim, okay? Things that, by their nature, you know, lend themselves to becoming rotten if, you know, within a short time. So if you know that by the time that they come to Yerushalayim, it's going to be rotten, therefore, in that particular case, what you do is you sell the produce while it's good, locally, take the money, tie it up in a bundle, take it to Yerushalayim, and there you spend it for whatever you need in order to enjoy Yom Tov. Yeah.
I just had a question on the part where the Nadar, where it's a lot, okay? Right. Now,
where what? I'm sorry.
The difference between the Nadar
and the Nadar, you mean?
Nadar.
Yeah. Nadar and Nadar. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Nadar.
Yeah. Right.
Nadar.
Yeah.
The Nadar, where it's on the person to perform it. What if, like, Joe, he loses all his sheep? Such a unforeseen thing, or all the other. What then occurs?
In that particular case, you say fa'falim. That's all. Too bad. Chaval.
Like right.
What can you do?
Okay.
Right. You don't have. You don't have. That's all.
Okay. Nobody has to give something.
Else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of
the other way around. I give a sheep. If the sheep gets lost or stolen,
it's the other way around. We said that the nadar is where you say, you say hare olai. In other words, I take upon myself the obligation of bringing a sacrifice.
That's the nadar.
That's the nadar.
That's the nadar.
Right. And the nadar you say this animal is going to be. That's right. Okay. Yeah, I mean that's easy to follow.
Yeah.
As far as the sacrifices are concerned, there is a specified time in the Torah as to how much time you have to eat them, and it depends upon the nature of the sacrifice. In other words, let's take the business about the Korban Pesach that has to be finished by midnight, okay? Now what happens if you still have anything left after that? Then that falls into what we call the category of nosor, so that has to be burnt. Now, the todah, the Thanksgiving offering, it says has to be eaten that day, so you have that day and that night in order to eat it, okay? And when does it become, as we say, pigul, in other words, becomes no good? The answer is, you know, the following morning, when the dawn breaks, then that's it. If anything is left over, then you have to burn the dosar, okay? In the case of the, most of the shlomim, so in that case it's 2 days and the intervening night, okay? So you have, let's say, Monday, Monday night and Tuesday, and then at sunset Tuesday, the rest of it becomes no sum. Okay, so that will have to be destroyed. No, so what do you do? So you invite as many as possible in order to join together with you, so that the food doesn't go to waste and doesn't become no sum. So that's what you try to prevent, because no sum is considered a hate. But if you can prevent it, by all means, you try to prevent it. Okay. Yeah.
It's
yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There is a commandment or a rule that you don't throw away food, particularly bread, very seriously considered that you shouldn't.
Okay.
Food.
All right.
But here we go. I say waste and burn.
Okay. Well, we try number one not to waste it. Okay. But a sacrifice is sacred according to where it's brought, for what reason it's brought, and how it is so on, right, and what is the amount of time that is given by the Torah for the consumption of it, okay? So anything that goes beyond that time, as I said, that has to be burnt. However, you try to have as many people as possible enjoy it during the proper time, so that would not necessarily cause any waste, that's all.
Conceivably,
all right.
If there were
right.
people who could not go to Jerusalem
yeah.
and to observe like midnight for the Korban Pesach,
yeah. right.
and they were doing it at a distance in their own homes,
can't.
They would not?
Can't. They can't.
Can't.
No. In that case, you make yourself a Passover meal and fathing, but
specifically
must be brought to the Beis HaMikdash. It's a korban, and you're not allowed to sacrifice outside of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. There was a time, as we learned, when it was possible. Before the Beis HaMikdash was constructed, right, then in that particular case, we had what they called the bomos, which means literally like private altars. And people could, do their own sacrifice of certain types of sacrifices, not every type, okay? But certain types of sacrifices, what we would call like family sacrifices, shlovim, tzvach, okay? That they would be permitted to offer, so that then, in those days, they were permitted to shech their own korban pesach and barbecue it and serve it to everybody, okay? But the minute that the Beis HaMikdash was completed and the sacrificial system began, then from that particular point you are prohibited from offering up any sacrifices except within the Beis HaMikdash itself, period.
But
okay.
You be allowed to check for your own food supply.
That's a different story.
Not as a sacrifice,
right.
But for your
yeah,
own food supply.
Right. For what we call chulin, in other words, the normal use of animals for food, this doesn't require it's not a sacrifice, okay?
I think there's a thread here that I'm picking up, though. That all our religion, you have a personal knowledge of what is right and what should be performed. Even if the public or others don't know that you are now attempting to deceive, in other words, to substitute another animal for an animal. Or the man himself now knows what is really the proper thing. The public may not know it, but this is the point I think that they're bringing out.
That's the honor system.
Yeah,
well,
right.
That's the point we're bringing out. He could have the food spoiled, and then he's not knowledgeable that now his requirement, though, is to replace it with the monetary value.
All right. Let me just conclude what you had to say. We have a very strong reference to something like this in the Torah itself. Torah in Parsha Kedoshim has a whole list of things, as for example, don't hate another person in your heart, right? Love the other person as you do yourself, right? So in many of these cases, you'll see the refrain where it says, V'yoreso me'elokech ani Hashem, or it simply says, Ani Hashem, I am the Lord. And what does it mean? So, as our sages and as Rashi explains, it means that there are certain things, as Rashi puts it, that Mesurim Lalev, in other words, they are given over to the heart of a human being, right? Other human beings are not aware of what it is, but nevertheless, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam knows it. And therefore, what you, have to do is that they have to do what is the right thing, because remember that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, you know, is looking to see what kind of a life you're living and how, you know, how moral a person you are, okay? So that's it. All right. Then we got in last week, I started to talk, I gave a general introduction today. I'm going to sort of try to go through it a little bit faster, except that it's difficult. So we'll do the best that we can. What we have over here in the next Mishnah is about Zod. And I explained to you that Zod is a person who sees a discharge which is not caused by an erection, right? But he has a discharge from, you know, his penis, and there's no good reason for it, okay? So, what happens if you see it once? It's not mentioned over here. But if you see it only once, then in that particular case, it's considered as if it was a seminal omission. Okay? If it's considered like a seminal omission, then in that particular case, you are unclean that particular day. But at night, you go into the mikveh, you wash yourself, and you're in business again. Okay? So that's the rule for a person who sees this kind of a discharge once. But now, what the Mishnah is more concerned is, what happens if a person sees it twice? And what happens if a person sees it three times? Then already you have a more serious proposition. Okay? So the Mishnah says, okay, Ein Bein Zov HaRosh Teiriyos, the Rosh Shalosh, Elokopat, says that the only difference between a Zov, a person suffering from this gonorrheal emission, who sees it twice, as compared to the one who sees it three times, the only difference is the korban. Because what happens, as we'll see, if it happens three times, which could mean three times the same day, or once for the 3 days, or maybe twice in 1 day, and once the following day, or something like that, but he sees three emissions, then in that particular case, when it's time to become, of course, immediately when you have it, you become unclean. Okay? Now remember, I said with one emission, it's only that particular day and that's it. Okay? But what happens if you see it twice? Then in that particular case, the answer is that you then have to begin to count 7 clean days. Okay? Now, what happens if you see it 3 times? Then in that particular case, as we'll see, you not only count, you know, the 7 clean days, but then at the conclusion of that, you know, of course, always by clean days, always has to be followed by what? By immersion of the mikveh, okay? And then you have to bring a korban, okay? So, this is what the Mishnah is saying then, that the only difference as far as the ruling if a person sees this as a zot between 2 times and 3 times, is that the person who has done it 3 times, who sees it 3 times, has to bring a korban also. Whereas if it only happened twice, then that person would not have to bring a korban. So now the Gemara is going to try, first of all, you know, to see wherein are they alike, wherein do we find these differences, and how in the devil did they ever come to this different conclusion? Okay? The reason I say that is because, as we'll see, the Gemara is going to argue the situation back and forth, in order to try to reach, you know, a conclusion. Because remember again, our sages did not stifle thought. And if there was a possibility maybe to interpret a text in a different way than the one that we just mentioned, then in that case they want to explore that and see whether there's any logic behind it, or is there, you know, any kind of validation from the Torah itself for that kind of argument. Okay? So this is what the Gemara now starts in with. So I said it's a little difficult, but hopefully you'll be able to follow me without too much problem. Okay? So the Gemara first of all says, Holy Inyan Mishka B'moshav Sveh Shiva Zevzeh Shokim. Okay. Now notice that in all these Ein Beins that we've had, right? We say that there's no difference between this and this except for, okay. But again, good. But they have certain things that they have in common, right? Zevazeshovin. This means this is what they have in common. Literally, it means that they were equal, okay? So, what do they have in common? So he says, first of all, when it comes to the inyan, in this case it means the matter of Mishkav and Moshe. Mishkav means literally lying down, and Moshe means literally sitting down. Now, what are we talking about? Okay, first of all, if a person lies down in a bed, what happens? Makes the bed tummy, okay? And what if he has, let's say, a mattress or a blanket or another blanket and so on and so forth, and he lies on top of it, it all becomes tummy. Okay? It all becomes tummy. It's like trying to, what is that, the princess of the and the pea, right. Yeah. Something like that, okay? So it all becomes, all right. And the same thing as far as sitting on the chair, you sit on the chair, that is upset. So also the tumor will be, you yourself will contract tumor from that. So in this case, whether, you know, it's where he lies down or where he sits, it's going to make tame whatever it may be. It could be a person, it might be other things as well, as we'll see. And the other thing that they have in common is Spiras Shiva. In other words, they have to count how many clean days before, they have to count 7 days. Okay? 7 days for him, there's no omission whatever. Okay? In order to know that then they can be restored to a state of cleanliness. Okay, God's fine. So the Gemara wants to know, Minohani Mile, how do you get that? Minohani Mile normally means from where do we derive these things, right? And usually they look for a reference in the Torah in order to, you know, to justify this opinion, okay? So he says, the Torah Rabbon. We find this out in a statement that our sages taught, where they said, they had, in other words, this tradition, which says, Rabbi Simai says as follows, he says, Mona HaKosev Shtayim Ukroi Tome, Sholosh Ukroi Tome. Okay. If we take a look in the original text where the business of Zot occurs, which happens to be incidentally in Parsha Metzora, okay, where it deals first with leprosy and then after leprosy it deals with Zov, okay, plus a few other things, but primarily these are the two major subjects in Metzora, okay, besides what is the ritual of purification when this period of uncleanness for Metzora is finally finished, okay. What is the procedure, what is the ritual that takes place when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash in order to become purified, okay? So, there they mention, you know, the fact that a person has an emission, right? And then they again mention the fact that he has an emission. Now, the first time around is already the second time, okay? Because, as I said, in the very first case, which the Torah doesn't mention at all, but it's understood, only it's learned, so there our sages say that a person receives only one omission, it's as if he had had a seminal omission, and therefore the same rule applies, okay? But as the Torah continues talking about Zav, then in that particular case, we see that it mentions in the case of twice, and it also mentions in the case of three times, okay? So Rashi says, the pasuk says, "Ishki es zov bibsaro," right? Zovo, right? If a person literally is zov and zovo, in other words, he emits his emission, so to speak. Okay. So how many times is the word zov mentioned over there? Then noun and verb. That's already twice, right? So in that particular case, you know, so he's now. He's now Ezov, right? Hareshtei Zivos, Meduyas, Kal. Okay? Ukroh Tome, and what does the Torah say? The Torah says that he is Tome as a result of it. What is it? somebody wandering around?
He just walked out.
Oh, that must have been Lerman.
Yeah.
Alan
had a lecture. Yeah. Sure.
Does the tumor last?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Then where does it mention the third time? The answer is, and then it again repeats. Shola Shakur Tommy. As Rashi says, the pasuk then says, "Vizos tiyeh tumaso bizovo." Right? You understand? So, how many times now has the word zov ziva zov mentioned? It's already three times. Okay, so that's how they get it. Okay. So, how we look at Shalosh as Rashi? You have now three cases. Ukro tami tumasehi, because the Torah says it is, you know, it is now, it is his tumah. So therefore we see that the word tome mentioned is also mentioned for the third time around. Okay? You notice incidentally how each word plays a very important part when it comes to try to learn a halach. Rashi explains the text over here that in the case of two mentions of ziva, that the person is unclean, and likewise in the case of three. This is what Rabbi Simai says. All right, so now he wants to know, so what is the difference then between them? He says, Ho Ketzad, right? So how, what do we get out of this? So Rabbi Simai is the one who says, Shtayim Letumo. In other words, two zivos makes you unclean in that you have to count not one, not just that day, but you have to count what? Seven clean days? That's the Tumo, right? The Shalosh HaKopet. And three would be that when you have counted your clean days after that, then you have to bring a korban. Okay. So now they're going to argue as to whether Rabbi Simai is correct in his interpretation. And the first thing that they say is V'emor. Alright, let me say as follows. Okay. That may be Shtayim Letumo, as you said before, right? That if you see it twice, then in that case you become Tomei, right? Below the korban, right? And you do not bring a korban after twice, but shalosh the korban, but maybe three, okay, you have to bring a korban, but below the tumah, but you're not unclean after three times. So Amrit, so the counter argument is ad shelo rosh shalosh rosh time. How could you say something like that? If you count, you see, three times, and you tell me after two, so in that particular case, obviously you are still Tommy. All right, so that's one counter-argument, okay? All right. Now, another argument. Right. The Amor, maybe I should argue as follows, okay? Shtayim the Korban, let's say that if you have two omissions, then in that case you have to bring a Korban below the tumor, but you still are not unclean. Shalosh, three, off the tumor. So then, in that particular case, you have to bring tumor, right, to become Tomei. And of course, it's to be understood that in that case, then you'd have to bring also a korban after three, right? So he says, lo sakal da'atek. No, no, no. You cannot imagine that this is what it should be, the Tanya. Because we have learned in connection with the business about Ziva, it says, v'chiper olav ha-kohen l'tei Hashem izovo, that the Kohen has to atone for him before the Lord from his Ziva, right, from his omissions. So, if it says mizovo from, the understanding is miksas zovin mivin. In other words, mi means from, which means that some of the zovin mivin korban, right, will bring a sacrifice, or miksas zovin in mivin korban, right, and some zovin do not bring a korban. Okay, so how would that work out? So, as we say, ro shalosh. If he has if he sees three emissions, then maybe, right, then he brings a korban. And shtayim, ain't no maybe. But if he sees only two, then he doesn't bring, all right? But we're not satisfied. We still want to argue back and forth. Oh, ain't no, or maybe that's not the case. Maybe we should argue as follows. What? Elo ro'o shtayim, beis bin shtayim, right? If he sees two of them, then maybe, then he has to bring a korban. Rosh Halosh, if he sees three, ain't no maybe, then he should not bring. So Amrit, look, you said before, actually, Rosh Halosh, Rosh Taim, right? Obviously, if he sees three, then he's already seen two, in other words, what? Then he's obligated to bring a korban. So they say, all right, good. The Yitzarech, the Rabbi Simai, the Yitzarech Mizovo. That being the case, in reality, I need both the drash that was given by Rabbi Simai, who said what? Take a look again, just a few lines above. Rabbi Simai said that, why did the Torah count first twice and then three times? To say that, and in either case, called them tobe, right? But according to Rabbi Simai, when is a korban brought? Only after three, okay? The Yitzarech Mizovo, and I also need the fact that Mizovo, the Kohen, is to, atone for him from his emission. For what? The Imi, the Rabbi Simai, have Amino Kikushan. If it were only the statement of Rabbi Simai, then I might say that, well, look, we have all kinds of controversies, whether it means two, that you do this, and three, you do something else, or should we say that two, you do this, and so on. So in order to resolve the question, therefore, Kamash Malon, that's the reason why we also have this interpretation of Mizovo, to say what? That if you see two, you don't have to bring a korban. You are Tommy, of course, but if you see three, then you have to bring a korban. So we need both interpretations in order to help us arrive at this decision. The E, Mizovo. Now, let's say that we only had the word Mizovo, so the E, Mizovo, then lo yadano kamariyos kamashmon, kamariyos, then I wouldn't know how many times a person has to see an emission. So therefore, Kamash Malon, this is why we learn the Rabbi Simai, that it's a question of twice or three times. The Hashtad Amit Mizovo. So now they say, all right, you have given me interpretation based upon Mizovo, right? And you said, Lidrasha, right? This is to be interpreted. But you know what? I have another pasuk where we also have the word Mizovo. And what is that pasuk? The pasuk is v'chi yitar hazov mizovo, and when the zov becomes clean from his zivo, my derash tebe, what do you do with that pasuk? So he says, ahumi bo'elei, that he says, I need lichadetanya, in order to teach a different teaching that we've already had, namely, v'chi yitar hazov, that when the Zav becomes clean, which means the Sheyif Sok Mizovo, when he stops finally having, his Ziva, right? The Lo Mizovo Venigo, but not if he suffers both from Ziva and leprosy. Why? Because it says Mizovo Visofa, right? It says from his Ziva, and he has to count. So what is this count business? Limed al zov bal shtei re'iyos, right? So the teaching in the Torah there is about the zov, who has seen two emissions, right? Sheton sfiras shiva, that he has to count 7 days. But it does not mention the same thing in connection with whom? With the mitzvah, supposedly. But as we're going to see, that in the case of a person suffering leprosy, we're not finished yet with the deal. Now I'm going to stop at this point because I'm already a little bit tired tonight. Yes. Okay, we are continuing tonight. What is it, the 11th, I think?
Twelve.
Somebody the 12th, Gaval Geschrien. Right, right. It's the 12th of the month of September, I hope.
Yeah.
Anyway, in another few days, we'll be observing Rosh Hashanah. And, of course, as I already pointed out...
2 days? Not 2 days.
No, in a few days.
A few days.
Right. And... remember that because the next four Wednesday nights are all Yom Tovim, so we will continue our shiur after Shabbos Parashas. Okay, right. As soon as the Simchas Torah is over and so on, so that's when we'll start. Did I say after Shabbos Parashas? Yeah, because Simchas Torah is still it's on a Wednesday, right? No. Okay. So. Sum up very briefly what we learned last week. The argument over there is about the difference. Remember, Ein Bein. This is the the connection of all these different statements that we had in the past few weeks, and that we'll continue with after we get back in Yitzhak Hashem. And the Ein Bein is that you have two things, and they have the same din except for. That's Ein Bein. Okay, so we learned, for example, last week we were talking about a person who is a Zov. And remember, Zov, as I explained already for the past couple of weeks, a person who has an emission, which in English they call, I mean, today they identify it with gonorrhea. Maybe yes, maybe not, I don't know. But at any rate, what is unusual about it is, of course, the fact that the man who has such an emission is not having an emission which is seminal, right? It's not semen, okay? But instead it's an emission of something or other, you know, that's coming out of him, which shows, you know, that he's suffering from some kind of a disease, okay? All right. The Torah also speaks about a zova. And what is a zova? A zova is a woman who has, she menstruates at a time when she should not be menstruating. In other words, she has something happening in the middle of the period, okay? We'll come to that a little bit later.
She can
okay.
also have gonorrhea.
She's menopausal.
Well, yeah. All right. But at any rate, what did we learn about the Zov and the Zova? We learned that in either case, it depends on how often is there an occurrence of this, okay? If it happens only once, they didn't mention it over here, but, you know, in the Gemara, Zovim, so, you know, over there, the rule is made quite clear. If you have it only once, it's considered, like, in the case of a man, then it's considered as if he was a Valkyrie. In other words, as if he had had a seminal emission, then the rule in that particular case is that for that day he's unclean, but that night... he can toivel and, you know, get straight with the world again, okay? And, of course, if the woman is also below Esdi Nassau, then in that particular case, she has to count a little bit to make sure that there's no recurrence or something like that. Okay. Now, getting back, however, to the Zov, sometimes it might happen that a Metzora, in other words, a person who is suffering from leprosy, could also at the same time be a Zov. So now the question is, what rule do you follow in that particular case? This is what we have at the bottom of the page over here. And this is why they ask the following question right now. It says over there, okay, I'm reading the third line. Right.
Third
line at the bottom. Okay.
Okay.
All right. I'll start from the middle. Okay. I'll start from the middle of the fifth line from the bottom. Okay?
Well,
it says, Bivoyle, we need this, he says, Tanya, as we have learned, V'chiyit har hazov, that when the Zov becomes clean. Okay? So when does he become clean? So they say, V'chiyif sok mizova, which means when he stops from his emission, right? The law mizova v'nigo, but the same rule does not apply to someone who is suffering both from an emission and also from leprosy at the same time. Why? Because in the case of Zov, the Torah says specifically mizova v'sofar, right? That from his zivo he has to count. So he says, Limit al Zov Valshtei Re'iyo Shetan Sphir HaShiva. Now we have learned already in the discussion above that when a Zov sees twice, then in that particular case, what? He has to count 7 days before he can be considered clean. Okay? And what if he sees three times? Then in that particular case, we say that then when he becomes clean after the 7 days, then in that case, he has to already bring a korban as well. Okay?
You're talking about a
person with an emission. Now, what if he has leprosy at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay?
Can he be clean with leprosy?
No, it's not clean with leprosy either. But the question is only about the counting period. This is the problem. How many days does he have to count, okay? With leprosy, we'll have a little bit more when we turn the page to the next slide, okay?
Yes. Page down there.
Yes, I do. I have the next page right over here, okay? It's waiting for you, okay? So, we learn, all right, so in other words, what they're saying is we learn from the pasuk, you know, v'chi yitar mizovo, that in that particular case, it applies to whom? To somebody who has seen two emissions. So now they say, v'halo dinhu. Why couldn't we figure it out logically without having to have a pasuk in the Torah in order to affirm it? Okay? What is the logic? It says, im etame mishka v'moshav lo yeheton sfira shiva. Right? If a person, we said that when he is a zav, then what happens? If he sits down on anything, right? Or if he lies down on anything, then what happens? Then that becomes unclean, right? And anybody who touches it subsequently is also going to become unclean. So, in that particular case, shouldn't a person then have to count 7 days? All right? But of course, what did we say? We said that if it's only once, then he doesn't count 7 days. So therefore, can we figure it out on a logical basis? No. And we have a case that proves the fact that you cannot go simply on the basis of logic, but you have to have a pasuk in order to teach it. And that is what we have when we turn to the next page. Okay, so now we have the next page. Okay. Take and pass. Yeah.
So because he conveyed the tumor to his couch and see.
Right.
That becomes a problem with counting. He's still a Zov.
He's still a Zov, right. During that time he is. But the question is about the,
about the counting?
The counting. Why does the Torah says that he has to count 7 days? And who then are we referring it to? So we have to say it has to refer to somebody who has seen two emissions. Because what did I say about one emission only?
No.
Only that day. And here's where they prove a case where also you count only 1 day. And that is the next page over there where they say, Shomeres Yom Kenegen Yom Tochiach. In the case of a woman who also has to count day by day, this proves the case, right? Why? Because if she is a Shomeres Yom, which means that, as I said, she saw a blood stain when? She saw it for 1 day, and it was not in the normal time when she should have her period. Because we say that between one period and another, of course, there have to be at least 11 days, okay? Now, if during the 11-day period she's sincere, then in that case she becomes Shomeres Yom, and in that case, that particular day, she is what? She's unclean, okay? But the rule in the Torah again is, again, that if this happens, Shemitama Mishkava Moshe, right? So she makes unclean, that is, she renders, Tomei, anything that she lies down upon or anything that she sits upon, right? But she's not required to count 7 days. So, therefore, we see, that it isn't automatically that if a person is a Zov, that he must count 7 days. Not if it is once. But because there are exceptions, that's why you cannot draw a logical inference. Okay? You need a pasuk in order to teach these things. And then he says, V'yapato al tisbaze. Says, don't be surprised about this. She'afal pisha betabe mishka v'moshav lehen tolen spira shiva. Right? You might argue as follows, that even though he, that is, let's say the person, you know, who is a Zav, who's had twice, he's seen twice, right? So, maybe what we might say that as follows, that even though the person who is a Zav makes Tomei anything that he lies down or sits down upon, so shouldn't he count 7 days? So Talmud Lomar Mizovo, right, Visofar. So this is why the Torah says Mizovo, and he has to count, which means what? Miksas Zovo Visofar, right? So therefore it teaches us what? That some people who have, who suffer from, you know, this mission, they suffer from Ziva, so they have to count, right? But nevertheless, others do not have to count. So what is it? So therefore, he takes this pasuk to say, "Limid al zov al shtei reiyos." Right? From this, we learn that a person who is a zov and he sees it twice, shetoon sfira shiva, that he has to count 7 days. All right, but not if he saw how much? If he only saw it once. Okay.
Twice or once?
Once. Twice already he has to count 7 days.
So
three times he has to count 7 days, but also bring a korban.
What difference does it make when he sits on a couch or whatever difference it makes? He's a zav.
He's a zav, right. Yeah, but the point is that when he's in a state of ziva, that he, not only is he tamei, but he's also metamei others, you see. That's the point. So if somebody has kanta, let's say somebody sits down on his bed or somebody sits down on his chair, then in that particular case, that person also then would have to count that day. Becomes tamei too.
Yeah, but if it's only one day, then you don't have to count.
Do they count according to?
You do have to count that day itself, but you don't count 7 days.
You don't count 7 days.
So in other words, the one who sits on whatever is tamei
has to go to mikvah.
Counts the same way as whoever whatever.
That's right. Exactly. Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't know how many people observe this these days.
Yeah.
I'll tell you in all honesty.
Yeah. You don't know too many people have got a rear either.
Our understanding of Tumman Tao today is entirely different.
Right.
It's very limited, I think.
And remember, you know, the whole concept of Tumman Tao primarily was in connection with whether a person can go into the Beis HaMikdash, whether a person can eat any of the things that we call kodshim and so on. Or if you were one of the Purushim, the Pharisees, or Chavirim, that's the term that they took upon themselves that they would eat even chulin, in other words, non-sacrificial or non-holy food, applying the rules of the Torah to it. In other words, that they had to be in a state of cleanliness when they ate. So, well, they went 1 degree further.
My father carried that into the idea that a menstruating woman may not go to the synagogue.
There's no issue on that.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying the way he instructed me very carefully from the time
it's the old thinking,
right.
And my father was a modern man, but he was raised in strict rabbinical.
There were those who, for example, had a tradition that a woman who was menstruating should not go to the cemetery, for example. You're looking for traditions.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has their own tradition. That's the whole thing, right? Yeah, well, that's what I said about Tara and Tuba, right? Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Right. All right. Anyway, let's finish this inyan over here, and we have just one more, and that's about Saraz, leprosy. And then we finally say goodbye to that and come in to more tremendous business. Okay.
Finish with the Ain.
No, we're not finished with Ain Bain, but the next Ain Bains that come after, we deal with leprosy, then we have better things to deal with. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. So first let's finish with the Ziv. Okay. With the Zop. Okay. All right. Omalei Rapapa Labaye. Okay. So Rapapa said to Abaye, he said to him, Maishnoa hai mizovo de marbe beizov, balshteira eos, and maishnoa hai mizovo de bimait beizov, balshteira eos. He says, you know, this business where it says, zov. So, in one case, you include the guy who has seen it twice. You include him in what? You include him in the fact, you know, that he has to count seven. On the other hand, you subtract him. What do you subtract him from? You subtract him from the fact that he doesn't have to bring a korban. Okay? So it's funny, using it both for addition and also for subtraction. Okay?
Was this before the time of minyanim? This was before the time of counting.
Counting what? Counting the minyan? No, that's an old tradition.
All right. Well, so could a
Talmud
man
mentions
like that
it. Yeah.
Be counted in a minyan?
Oh, you mean if he were a zov?
Yes.
That's a question.
The question is
of a man who's in the state of Tumah, is he permitted, for example, to study Divrei Torah? Is he permitted to daven and so on? We learned that Gemara in Brachos, if I'm not mistaken, where it says that there was a difference of opinion about that. But we finally decided, according to Halacha, that the person can study Torah and can daven and so on and so forth.
But that almost would relate to my father's attitude about going to the synagogue.
I think it was maybe kissing the Torah that we like a prohibition for women.
That's another question. It's another question.
Right.
In the original
Beis
HaMikdash, he wouldn't be able to go.
No.
Right, correct. The Beis HaMikdash, he did not go. Of course, if he was in the state of Tumah, he's not allowed to go. Okay.
All right.
Okay. All right. So Amalei, so he answered him and he said, if we say that the pasuk that we, Mizovo has come in order to exclude him from something, namely from the korban, the Torah didn't have to say anything. Medina, and if you say that you derive it logically because of the fact that Shomer is Yom Keneged Yom Tochiach, that the woman who counts one day, if she sees something, this will prove it. And if you say that the pasuk means that it refers only to ziva and not to leprosy, so imkein lichtev kurovich yitar zov. So let the Torah simply say v'chiyitar ha'zov v'lishtok, and that's it. Say nothing more. So why does it say v'zovo lomoli? What do I need you? So it says limited. So teach us what al-zov bal shtei re'yir shetun spir shiva. It teaches us that if you see twice, then you have to begin counting not one day but 2 days. All right. So Baruch Hashem, we finished this. I hope it will go on now to leprosy.
Wasn't it 3 days?
No, 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 no.
2 days?
No, three, seeing the 3 times.
Yeah.
Either it could be 3 times the same day, could be maybe twice in one, once and twice, or once for 3 days in succession. So
then they have to.
Then they have to bring, not only they count 7 days, but then they have to bring a korban to the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah, three days. Yeah.
Yeah, if they saw it 3 times, okay?
Three times.
Right. It doesn't say 3 days, it says 3 times. Although, there's a question about that. How do you count it? Okay. All right. So now finally we come to the Ein Bein, as far as the Mesorah, as far as the person suffering from leprosy is concerned. Okay. So let me just refresh your memory. What does the Torah say? Of course, there are chapters and chapters in Parsha Tazria and also in Parsha Metzora, right? In Tazria, we speak about a person who contracts leprosy. And on the other hand, in Metzora, we deal with how the Metzora becomes clean. What is the ceremony that he has to go through in order to be clean after he has counted a sufficient amount of time? The leprosy is a part of it. Okay. But remember, there are 2 things. If a person is suspected of having leprosy, this has to be confirmed by whom? Not by the doctor, but has to be confirmed by the Kohen. Okay. And the kohen has to see him in the daytime so he can see very clearly what it is. He's not allowed to do it at night, for example. Okay? So he has to affirm. Now, if the person is, the first time that he sees something, the kohen examines him and decides that he may possibly be suffering from leprosy, then it's written for his gira ha-kohen. All right? That the kohen has to literally lock him up. Now, what do we mean by lock him up?
Isolate.
So, yeah, he has to isolate him. Okay? In the time of the, when the people of Israel were wandering in the wilderness, what did the isolation consist of? It was shiluach, because we have that at the beginning of Parsha Notzei, where it says over there, v'yishalchum damachne, kol zoh, v'chol tzeruah, and so in other words, people are suffering either from zivo or from tzaras, in other words, from leprosy, whatever it may be, but they shall be outside the camp. Okay. Mechutz l'machane. Yeah. Because you had three machanos. There's, okay? There's the machne kehuna, where the priesthood, that was the holiest one. Then you had machne leviyah, right? And then finally, you had machne leviyah, the Levites, where the Levites were. They had lesser rank, so that therefore they had their own camp. But then, so, and then finally, you had machne Yisrael, the average Jew, okay? Not a Kohen or a Levi. But where did they have to go? They had to go mechutz l'machne. They had to go outside all three machnes, okay? In order not to contaminate, you know, the people who were
in
the camp, right? Okay? So,